Three, two, one. Welcome, everyone, to the SI Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Trana. Thanks for joining me. It's going to be an unusual pod, which you'll hear about when I get into the interview with my guest, Ben Strauss, sports media reporter of The Washington Post. Obviously, the biggest story in the country going on is coronavirus. I didn't want to spend a whole pod on it. I sort of explained why with Ben. So we discuss it a little bit, and then we get into some media topics. So that's this week's pod with Ben Strauss of The Washington Post. Does a great job covering sports media. If you missed any of the past SI Media podcasts, last week we did two of them for you. We had Rachel Nichols from ESPN on, and we had a separate pod with Andrew Marchand of the New York Post to discuss Tony Romo staying with CBS and the next moves for ESPN. Tom Verducci was on the podcast as well recently, so if you have not heard any of those, go into the archives and check those out, and please subscribe to the podcast. All right, here we go with this week's episode, sports media news discussion here with Ben Strauss of The Washington Post. All right, joining me now, Washington Post sports media reporter, Ben Strauss. He's been on the pod before. Appreciate him coming on. Ben, how's it going?
My pleasure, Jimmy. I'm good. I've been quarantined. I'm at home. Not allowed to go in the office anymore.
So is it a, because we have a similar situation at SI that I'll get into in a sec. So is it you are not allowed to go into the office, or is it we recommend you staying home? Okay. Yeah, I think
it's stronger than a recommend.
Right. We had, I guess there was someone tested positive over the weekend in one of the parts of our big office building and for coronavirus. So we were told, you know, feel free to work from home. So for anyone listening to this, I don't know what the sound quality is. I'm recording this myself and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. There's noises in the background. I heard birds in my backyard before coming through the recording. So let me get this right up front. This is not your typical SI Media podcast. So we might as well start with coronavirus. And I'm not really, I don't really even want to get into it and discuss it because I don't feel I'm equipped to. And I feel like this is a situation where, you know, I'm not a quote unquote stick to sports person. I think that's ridiculous, and I'm all for people sharing their political views, blah, blah, blah. But when something like this is going on, sometimes I feel like it's better to just sit it out. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I feel woefully uninformed in general. I feel much more equipped to sort of, you could talk about the fallout.
Right, we'll get into that, yeah.
Right, like, yeah. I think like the clubhouse situation is interesting because now we're sort of talking about what the clubhouse access means to reporters. Mm-hmm. I think that's super interesting. I think it's a lot murkier, a lot harder for you and I to sit here and be like, what is the science behind closing it, or sort of, you know, what is, right, you know, the likelihood of corona spreading inside the clubhouse versus, you know, in the stands. I don't know the answer to that.
Which is why I feel uncomfortable even discussing it, because I feel like there's a couple of things at play here. I mean, it's hard to even discuss this without getting into the politics of it, which I'm not going to put on you or expect you to go there. And you know, I know people are going to get turned off, and I think anyone who would blame Donald Trump for this is an idiot. But what I do feel like is that, I do feel like that because most of the people in this country think that he's incompetent, that's why there's an overreaction to how to handle this. And I have no idea whether teams should be playing in front of no fans, cancel the Ivy League tournament, you know, the Mariners may move games to Arizona, et cetera, et cetera. I have no idea what they're supposed to do in this situation. So it's hard for me to speak about this in any definitive way. That's how I feel.
Well, I guess it would be, right, like if the city of San Francisco says to the Warriors, you shouldn't play, and the Warriors say, we're going to play anyway, or with fans, right? And then now they've come out in the last little while and said, now you actually can't play with fans. It would seem that it's sort of interesting what it requires, what the threshold for, you know, a sports team to keep fans out of the game, right? If they were told that you shouldn't do this, that wasn't enough for the Warriors. The city of San Francisco said to them, you cannot do this. And that was the line where right. now they're going to play with no fans. Like, that seems pretty interesting to me.
Yeah. I guess also, you know, again, it's one of those dicey things because, you know, you may see, for instance, I listened yesterday to Chris Mad Dog Russo on Sirius XM, and he did an hour on Corona. And, you know, not exactly like the most serious and educated and informed takes, but entertaining nonetheless. And it's like, okay, is this supposed to be an entertaining topic? I found it entertaining, but, you know, people are sensitive. I don't blame them, especially as it gets worse. So all around it, to me, it's just a very uncomfortable thing to discuss publicly. Privately, I'll chew your ear off.
Is that like the end of the segment? As to why we're not going to talk about it anymore?
I will say this, and again, I don't know if this is sort of insensitive, but what I, you know, if you're bringing it back to the sports world, what I keep thinking about is the NCAA tournament. Obviously, we know they canceled the Ivy League. TV ratings are not what's important here. It's people staying alive and paying attention to things, but it does seem like if I'm CBS and Turner, I think this is almost like the 2016 presidential election where you better be prepared for a ratings hit because people are tuning out of sports and into CNN more and more or whatever news channel they watch. I wonder how this affects, again, not important in the grand scheme of life. We know it, but this is the SI Media podcast. So I'm just trying to sort of bring it into that world. You would think CBS Turner, the ratings end up taking a big hit here. If they're playing in empty arenas, then from a, you know, what's the word? Just from a bizarre, let's... Exactly. Then there's that flip side.
Yeah. So I guess, okay, before the ratings thing, I would say the NCAA tournament, sort of how these colleges are handling, you know, the corona. You know, it's very easy to sort of look at the difference between the way some of the schools are handling things on campus versus the way they're handling their basketball teams. Like the University of Maryland, I think, is sort of limiting, you know, stuff on campus. Mm-hmm. My colleague, Adam Kilgore, who's been writing about this, you know, just tweeted that they have nothing to say about their basketball team now going to potentially play, you know, in a full arena in the Big Ten tournament. So I think there is sort of this unexplainable gap between the way, you know, colleges are handling their students and handling their basketball teams, which, you know, seems troubling, I would say. Sort of independent of that, sort of what, like, are people going to watch more because or less because of the coronavirus? Yeah, I think you're right that with way more things going on, that sports is probably less front of mind. I did think that both Jeff Zucker and Sean McManus, you know, had an interesting thing to say. They did a conference call yesterday. They said sort of, you know, in a moment like this, sports can be, you know, this unifying thing, you know, this thing that can be good for the country. So I wonder if, right, you have all these people at home, you know, who can't go out, maybe that helps, you know, TV ratings. Maybe more people want to be distracted from going on and they want to watch the NCAA tournament.
Right. That makes sense. I'm just curious. Give me the vibe there. So I know here in New York, this felt like, what's that analogy? Like the ball going down the hill. It really picked up in the last 3 to 5 days where things really got to a scary level here. Like I said, we've been told to sort of stay home, you know, subway rides down, businesses down. I'm hearing a lot of restaurants say that, you know, they're doing monster takeout business. People aren't going. And obviously, New York has been one of the places hit with this more than others, except for maybe Seattle, Washington, I should say. But you're in D.C. Give me a little taste of what's going on down there with this. Is it full-blown panic? Has it been picking up over the past few days? What's going on there?
Yeah, I don't think we're quite to the point where you guys are. There's been a couple of instances where people have tested positive in the, you know, DC, Maryland, Virginia area. There was a priest at a church in Georgetown who tested positive for it, and he gave communion apparently. And so everybody who took part in that right now has to be quarantined. So I think it's probably only a matter of time before the snowball starts going. So I think here we're probably a few days behind, but it seems like it's only a matter of time before we get there.
Yeah, I guess.
But it's not like a ghost town here or anything mm-hmm. at this point.
I guess sort of to just put a bow on what I had said earlier about not being comfortable discussing it. I guess what it ultimately comes down to is that I don't want to mock anyone who is overreacting, and I don't want to tell people they shouldn't overreact. I think either reaction, over or under, is fine in this case because it really is an unknown.
That is, seems to be fair. I wish there was somebody who could just tell me the appropriate amount to react to this.
Right.
I don't know if I'm over or underreacting, but it would be really great if there was, you know, some way to know you were reacting appropriately, because I think you're right. I have no idea if it's one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, locking yourself in your house seems extreme, but if this is out there and the cases keep growing, it's understandable. If you want to keep living your life, I understand that. So it's, and then, you know, you factor in the sports here. And listen, you know, it's hard to get on people if they don't want to be sitting with 30,000 people in an arena. I mean, just look at what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is that the tournament's supposed to start like a week and a half from now. That I'd be surprised if they were playing in front of full stadiums.
Right, right.
And yeah, I also get like the Harvard guys who were furious that their tournament got canceled. Right, they, you know, were all set to play in this 14 tournament to go the Ivy League tournament to go to the NCAA tournament. And all of a sudden, they don't have that chance. I mean, right. You're a senior. That's your last chance to go to the tournament. I mean, that makes total sense to be irate and furious about that, you know, on that end too.
Right. I just think it's hard to criticize whether it's the Ivy League, whether it's the Golden State Warriors. It's hard to criticize any entity for what they're trying to do. What's in the best interest of people. So, you know, ripping them for overreacting, even if it is an overreaction, I think is, I mean, their hearts seem to be in the right place.
Sure. You'd also probably rather have people overreact than underreact.
Right.
So at this point, it's probably hard to criticize anybody for overreacting.
There was a thing yesterday, and I did sort of make light of it on Twitter, because there was a tweet early on Tuesday from a Yankee beat reporter started tweeting out that Gleyber Torres had had a fever and he was missing a game. And I mean, within 3 seconds, it was, you know, he has Corona. I mean, we got to relax a little bit.
Yeah. Strange times. I don't know.
Yeah. Very.
I don't know what I have for you, man.
No, that's all right. It's all right.
Let's talk about the Monday Night Football.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get into that. It was Gary Sanchez, by the way, not Gleyber Torres. I messed that up. All right. So, again, I understand this is not the most important story in America, but this is the SI Media Podcast, so now we will transition to the usual nonsense and lighthearted fare. I was not surprised even 0.00001% that NBC would not engage ESPN in talks for Al Michaels. Were you at all surprised by that?
Well, I would just, I mean, before we go any further, I would give a shout out to our friend Andrew Marchand. I think he's been killing it on this story. Every big story, it's his. So, I mean, I think we only know this stuff because he's been reporting it. And most of the people that I've talked to seem to think he's pretty on it.
He's been on it from the, yeah, I mean, he broke the Tony story of returning to CBS, and he had obviously Al and Peyton, which, I mean, I never really took that story seriously. I mean, I think that was one of ESPN's plans for sure. I shouldn't say I didn't take the story seriously. I didn't think there was a chance it would happen. I think that's right.
It's like the idea that they would want Al Michaels and Peyton Manning makes a ton of sense. The idea that that would ever happen seems like a pipe dream.
Yeah. It would have been fascinating to see what ESPN could have given up for Al.
I did ask around a little bit, like, what could you even trade? And it was sort of interesting. Like, you could trade highlights packages, or you could trade, you know, access to production staffs. And it would have sort of been, you know, pretty interesting to see, like, what pieces would be valuable to a network, or even, like, what could be traded. Alas, it seems like we won't get there. But I do think, I mean, I guess ultimately, I think it, like, all this stuff with Romo and Manning and Michaels, all it just shows you really, like, the power of the NFL, right? I think in years past, we've talked about, like, this is peak, you know, NFL power era. I had the ratings decline a couple of years ago and concussions and you know, things like Ray Rice. And now we're, you know, sitting here in 2020 and it's back to, like, the NFL has never been more powerful. And the idea that, you know, you'd pay, you know, $15-17 million for an announcer is really just because the NFL is that important to you.
What's the reaction you've gotten from people in the business about Romo getting 17 and I guess now it's $18 million a year?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, if you're going to pay $1.5 billion for the NFL rights, does it matter if you're paying your announcer $12 million or $15 million or $17 million?
Right.
It's like, you know, like if you're going to buy a Ferrari, are you going to, you know, turn it over to Mr. Magoo, or are you gonna, like, you know, get Al Unser to drive it, right? Like, right. If you're gonna be in the business of the NFL, you might as well, put the best product, the best package together, because this is essentially when the most people are watching your network. It's the best chance to, you know, advertise for your shows, to, get eyeballs on all of the rest of the stuff your network is doing, right? Like Nance and Romo on Sunday afternoon is like CBS's most important, you know, 3 hours of television of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does seem like, from what I saw, people in the business understood the contract. Fans obviously thought it was outrageous. And listen, it could still be outrageous, but for an analyst to get $17-18 million a year, you would have thought you'd hear more from people, even off the record, say, you know, what the hell. But there was, I didn't get a lot of that at all.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't either.
Yeah. Let's get back to Peyton Manning for a sec. You know, ESPN seems to just, for some reason, have this infatuation with him. I mean, I get it. He's as big a name as I guess you can have if you're going to hire someone for the booth. But at some point, I would think they'd be concerned that the guy just doesn't want to do it. Are you hearing anything on the Peyton Manning? Let me start with this. Without Al getting traded from NBC, do you still think Peyton is still the number one analyst that ESPN wants to get for Monday Night Football?
Yeah, I think he's their top guy for sure. I mean, the question isn't like, does ESPN want Peyton Manning? It's, does Peyton Manning want to do it? And you think that he'd be pretty good at it, but you don't know for sure, number one. And the second thing is, I sort of feel like Peyton Manning, from talking to people, I think Peyton Manning probably has more to lose from this job than most people who take this job. I mean, if you think about him, he's this, you know, golden boy, Super Bowl winning quarterback. He does commercials and he's super funny. He goes on Saturday Night Live and he's like super great. You know, if he's not like amazing as an announcer, like that's a sort of a step down from how we think of Peyton Manning. So I think there's probably more to lose for him in doing something like this than there is for anybody else, right? For most people, it's sort of, you know, it's like your profile gets bigger and you have all these things to gain. I think for Manning, I don't think it's quite as simple.
That's a very interesting point, because what I've heard over the years from multiple people is that the reason why Peyton never took the job in the past, or one of the reasons, one of the big reasons, he didn't want to do games called by Eli or Tom Brady. And I guess, you know, if he's calling games from Eli, there's the perception there that he's biased and all that. So maybe he was a little sensitive to blowback from there. And it's also, the other reason why your point is very interesting is because I wonder if I don't think Peyton's on Twitter, smart guy. But I wonder if he's aware of just how much blowback Tessa Torn, Booger and Witten for that 1 year have gotten where, I mean, it's pretty relentless. And, you know, if you're Peyton Manning, why on earth would you want to put yourself through that?
Yeah, I think it's a totally fair question. I think for ESPN, right, what it's all about is ESPN wants to get in this, Disney wants into the Super Bowl rotation. They want more NFL. They pay double, you know, what CBS and Fox pay for, you know, this, you know, mediocre Monday night game sometimes. They obviously need all the highlights, and that's sort of where the money comes from. But, you know, they pay so much money, you know, to not be in that Super Bowl rotation. And I think it is, you know, from what I've heard, it's pretty tough to go to the NFL and say we want a Super Bowl when, you know, who's going to announce that Super Bowl is their Monday night booth. But I don't know. I don't know if they need Peyton Manning.
Right.
They just need sort of like a neutral booth that doesn't, you know, sort of, you know, become a lightning rod and, you know, get ridiculed. They just need something that's okay.
Right.
They don't need Peyton Manning.
Right. I agree. I feel bad for Joe Tessitore and Booger McFarland because it's basically like, okay, they're out of jobs, yet they still have the job and contracts. You know, it's kind of distasteful there. And I'm
they
adding to it.
They make a lot of money. They'll be okay.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But, yeah, I guess. Let's talk about the XFL for a sec here. I don't know if you've experienced this or have seen this, but the XFL on Twitter has some really bizarre fans, and I referred to them as XFL truthers a couple of weeks ago, and I see people have used that term now. Because if you report what the ratings are, there's this, I don't know if they're bought and paid for, I don't, you know, they work for the league, I don't know what it is, but you get attacked by this small group of crazy people if you just report what the numbers are. The XFL started out week one, I guess, with, you know, decent numbers, and then they've gone down every single week since. The drop from week one to week two was 35%. That's what I had written one day, and people were up in arms, I guess, you know, to just give a fact. But they've gone down every single week. Have you heard anything about how ESPN and Fox feel about the XFL? Because in comparison to, I guess, you know, college basketball, the ratings are strong, and NASCAR or whatever. But what's the vibe on that? Because the ratings are going to keep going down once March Madness.
Right. I guess the question, so I don't have a lot of daylight into, you know, what the networks want. I would say I don't have a ton of daylight into sort of how the leagues, you know, view the ratings numbers. Obviously, the numbers themselves are not bad compared to, you know, like MLS or
right
bowling or other, you know, sports that are not, you know, tier one rights. I think it probably just comes down to a cost benefit analysis, right? Like all these things do. And I wonder also how much money the XFL itself needs from, you know, their broadcast partners to stay, you know, and float and to make this worth Vince McMahon's while.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to is how much, yeah, I don't necessarily know if it's wins, losses, in terms of money, how much, if Vince is losing money, breaking even, and that's really, I guess, what it's going to come down to in the end.
Yeah, like the numbers themselves are sort of interesting. You see them like every Tuesday or Monday or after the weekend they come out. But I think it's sort of like the numbers themselves aren't going to tell us anything. It's the numbers, you know, associated with the costs.
Right.
And does it make sense?
Right. Before I let you go, I do want to talk to you about something you wrote recently, which was an excellent article. And I can tell you that many a person at SI read it, which was about The Athletic and sort of the future of sports writing. Again, I'll be, you know, full disclosure, I'm not entirely comfortable talking about The Athletic because a million people I used to work with are working there now. So it's, you know, it's a little, what's the word there? I don't know, uncomfortable. But anyway, The Athletic, you painted an interesting picture because like you said, the headline on your story, it's either reassuring or terrifying that so many writers work there. And there's always, you know, I guess it's kind of difficult to get full numbers and stats on The Athletic in terms of profits, subscriptions, et cetera. But they seem like they never sort of give you, they never sort of sell it like anything other than like, we're here and we're here to stay and we're going to keep going and growing. And, but I don't, no one knows what their profits are. So it makes it kind of a confusing story. Is that?
Yeah, I think there's sort of like two sides of it, right? I think, you know, the salaries they pay and the jobs that they're, you know, giving out at a time when, you know, there just aren't a lot of good jobs in this industry is like a wonderful story. And so you, and I would also say, I think that they're, the product has gotten better and better. Like, I think the journalism and the, stories have like really gotten a lot better. And I think if you, you know, like I live in DC, I'm a, you know, a big Chicago White Sox fan, like one of seven in the country. But they have great White Sox coverage and I subscribe so I can, you know, read about the White Sox. And so you have this, and they have a million subscribers, right? Or some, something right around there. So they've built something that, you know, not an insignificant number of people want to read. And so, right, it's sort of this really nice story. But there is sort of this murky side to it where, you know, does the money that they spent line up with the money that they're bringing in? And also sort of, you know, the people that have spent 140, you know, pumped $140 million into it as investors, like what happens, what do they want? And, you know, what happens, you know, when they're sort of asking about their investment.
Right. And you talked about the fact that the company, you know, they want a sale basically to happen with that company.
Yeah. Some investors, right? Like how do they make their money? They make their money, you know, on a sale. So, you know, similarly to, you know, most any startup, if you're investing in a startup, you either want, you know, sale or an IPO. And it seems like across venture capital that IPOs have become more complicated and more fraught lately, which leaves sort of sale as like the off ramp that you want if you've, you know, pumped money into this thing.
And then Fox Sports, I guess it at one point was interested, and then but nothing happened there.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that, you know, anybody, like meetings happen all the time, and Fox Sports like doesn't really have much of a digital footprint, so, you know, it would make sense to, you know, have a conversation. You know, my understanding is they didn't, you know, go too far down the line. But, you know, the matchup to, you know, have that conversation sort of makes sense.
Yeah. I'm very curious. I think in the media world, The Athletic's a huge story. I'm not sure, you know, regular sports fans, but that's definitely one I'm keeping an eye on. So I appreciate the coverage there.
Yeah. I guess that's probably true. I guess actually that sort of like fits into the question about The Athletic, right? That it's, if you're in sports media or like in media in general, I think you are super interested.
Yeah.
But the hurdle is like to get known and have like this wider population of sports fans know about it and like need to subscribe.
Right.
And so the fact that it's like more of a media fascination than the fascination of like sports fans at large is like exactly the conundrum there and or the problem that they need to solve.
Yeah. Definitely keep an eye on them. I appreciate you coming on in this crazy time and dealing with all my stuff here with this bizarre taping today. So I thank you very much and look forward to having you on again in hopefully much more normal circumstances.
My pleasure, man. It's always a pleasure.
All right, that wraps up this edition of the SI Media Podcast. Thanks for listening. Again, if you missed any previous podcast, Rachel Nichols last week was on the SI Media Podcast. Andrew Marchand as well. We did two pods last week. Had Andrew on to talk about Tony Romo. Tom Verducci, a recent guest as well. So you can listen to those in the archives. Download, subscribe, rate, and review. All right, that wraps it up. We'll see you next week. Take care.